Welcome to Blue Dot, a look at our place in space. I'm Dave Schlone. On April 8th, 2024, along a narrow 115-mile-wide band, the moon's shadow will race at the speed of a jet from Mexico up through Texas, passing through the American heartland over cities like Indianapolis and up into the Northeast. It's one of nature's greatest spectacles, a total solar eclipse, and more U.S. citizens will get a chance to see it than any other eclipse in history. It's the last time Americans will see a total solar eclipse in the U.S. for decades. While still months away, time is running out for you to make arrangements to see this incredible celestial spectacle, something I think truly everyone should get to experience once in their lifetimes. Our guest and guide to the eclipse is an expert. Rick Feinberg is a senior contributing editor to Sky and Telescope magazine and project manager for the American Astronomical Society's Solar Eclipse Task Force. He joins us now to talk about it. Rick Feinberg, welcome to Blue Dot.
Thank you very much, Dave.
So let's get to some of the really basic things first. We have an eclipse coming up next year. Tell us about when.
Well, we have a solar eclipse coming to all of North America on Monday, April 8th, 2024. And what makes it special is that it will be a total solar eclipse on a path from Texas to Maine, which means that some 32 million people who won't have to go anywhere because the eclipse is coming to them have the opportunity to see the moon completely cover the sun's bright face, revealing its magnificent and spectacular solar corona on that Monday in April.
Yeah, and that's a lot of people in the eclipse path, like as compared to 2017, which went through kind of more rural areas. This one's kind of a city eclipse. What are some of the big major cities that it's going to pass through?
Well, I think the biggest is Dallas, Texas. The Dallas.
I've heard of that place.
Yeah, yes. You will have heard of all of the ones I mentioned, I suspect.
They have a football team with a star on the helmet.
They do. And in fact, there's going to be a giant eclipse watching event at the Cotton Bowl in Dallas. So let's see. So Dallas is probably the biggest, but there are other big cities in Texas that, if not in their entirety, at least partially will be in the path of the eclipse. Austin, I think, is almost entirely within the path. San Antonio gets cut in half. I think if you're in the northern part of San Antonio, you can see the total eclipse. If you're in the southern part, you should go to the northern part so you don't miss it. And then as the eclipse moves to the northeast, and when I say as the eclipse moves, what I mean is as the moon's shadow moves to the northeast, it's going to pass through a variety of cities in a dozen other states. And some of the biggest ones will be Indianapolis in Indiana and Rochester and Buffalo in New York. I'm not sure if Cincinnati gets it, but Cleveland definitely gets it. Cleveland, Ohio. And then it heads up into northern Vermont. Burlington, Vermont is going to be a hot spot for New Englanders to go see the eclipse. But it also passes through northern New Hampshire and all the way into Maine. Maine doesn't have any particularly large cities, but lots and lots of small towns in Maine will get the eclipse.
Wow. And that's a lot of people that are going to have this opportunity, and a lot of people that won't have to travel very far to get to see this eclipse.
That's right. If they're in the path, they don't have to travel at all. It's coming to them.
Wow. And you're a member of the American Astronomical Society's Solar Eclipse Task Force. You're the project manager for that. Tell us a bit about that, the task force itself. What's their role in all of this?
All right. Well, we date back to before the 2017 eclipse. What happened was that the American Astronomical Society, obviously, we all knew that this eclipse in August of 2017 was coming because it had been on all of our calendars for years. And we thought, what can we do to help prepare the country for it? And the main thing that we wanted to do was ensure that people had a safe and enjoyable experience. And so many of us who are astronomers and who have seen total solar eclipses have traveled to parts of the world where when a total solar eclipse is coming, we get all kinds of dire warnings from the government or from the medical community, stay inside, don't expose yourself to the sun, you could go blind. And we didn't want that kind of erroneous messaging to be propagated throughout the country. So we decided Let's form a task force whose first and foremost responsibility will be to get all of the major players in astronomy on the same page about accurate safety messaging. And then we thought, well, okay, how are we going to do that? And one of the ways we decided to do it was to hold workshops where we would involve all kinds of people. If we held these along a path of totality, we figured we'd get a lot of representatives from communities that would be seeing a huge influx of visitors on the eclipse day. And we figured, you know, we'll get emergency management people and local and state government people, and we'll get, of course, all the amateur astronomers and professional astronomers, university astronomy departments. We wanted to involve the medical community, so we reached out to professional medical associations. And the long and short of it is that roughly every 6 months to a year, from about 2014 all the way up till now, we've been doing workshops that have involved hundreds of stakeholders who will be experiencing totality, many of whom didn't know before 2017 or even now don't really understand what their community is facing with the possibility of, you know, tens of thousands of visitors. And so that was what we did. And the task force still is around, and we're looking forward to wrapping it up next year, after which there won't be another big eclipse in the U.S. for like 20 years. So we're all going to take a 20-year break.
Yeah, like 2044. Okay, well, what are some of the lessons you guys learned from 2017 when we had a total solar eclipse in the United States, the last one, and I got to enjoy that. It was spectacular. And we'll talk about the experience of the eclipse a little later. But what are some lessons, you know, as far as like, you know, public safety and dealing, because there's a lot of people, you know, try to get into that path, you know, understandably so, but that can create a lot of problems as far as infrastructure, gridlock, you know, bathrooms. You know, I remember one of the most interesting experiences to me going to Oregon was like looking out and going, oh my gosh, I wished I had invested in porta potties a few years ago, because this yes. really, I could have made a lot of money on this. Yes. So tell us about some of the lessons learned from 2017.
All right. Well, one of the really good lessons was that if all of the recognized authorities in astronomy and related subjects are speaking the same language and saying the same things about eclipse safety, that you do manage to protect the public and still allow them to see the eclipse. And so between the AAS, the American Astronomical Society, and NASA, and all of the people that we were able to reach through our workshops, through our press releases, through our articles on the AAS website and on NASA's website, we convinced the public that it was safe to be outside during an eclipse, that with proper eclipse glasses or other solar viewers that met the international standard for those products, it was safe to look at the sun before and after totality. We got the message out there that it's perfectly safe to look at the sun without any protection during totality, because the entire sun's bright face is covered. So what's left, the corona, is no brighter than the full moon and just as safe to look at. So we did a survey of the optometric and ophthalmological and medical societies that we'd been in touch with before the eclipse, after the eclipse, to find out how many injuries were reported. And, you know, something like 200 million people watched this thing outside, and there were like fewer than 100 reports of injuries, none of them serious. So we felt like we did a really good job with the safety messaging. And so we're using very similar safety messaging again.
You need solar eclipse glasses of some kind. And you got to make sure they're the proper type. We did have some, I guess, counterfeit stuff going on in 2017. So tell us about the basic safety aspect of, you know, what you need to protect your eyes with leading up to those moments of totality. Because once you're in totality, you need to take those glasses off. And we'll cover all that later. But tell us about the glasses you need.
Okay, well, first, let me clear up another potential misconception, because this got in the way of some people's enjoyment back in 2017 as well. You don't have to have eclipse glasses or any other kind of equipment, because there are ways of seeing the partial eclipse, partial phases of the eclipse, indirectly, you know, through some kind of projection technique. And I can go into those later.
I used a colander.
Yeah, colander is great. Anything with small holes in it, a spoon from the kitchen, you know, a slotted spoon, or preferably one with circular holes, or really just small holes.
So you're just projecting the image of the sun onto something, and that's safe to look at. But if somebody does, for folks that want to look up and watch the progress of, you know, the actual eclipse and want to look at it, you do want glasses for that.
Yes, and it's. I think it's more fun to look directly at the sun and actually see it as a bright disk in the sky. Now, you can't do that without some kind of protection, because the sun is just so intensely bright. If you were to stare at it, you know, you're going to hurt your eyes. You're going to cause problems in your retina, and you're probably going to have blind spots or worse. So in the old days, like when I first got into eclipse chasing back in the early 90s, and a lot of people have been doing it longer, a lot of us just used very, very dark welder's filters, because those filtered out enough of the sunlight to allow for a comfortable and safe view. But then later that decade, people started producing these so-called eclipse glasses. And they also come as handheld solar viewers, using some kind of thin film that filters the sunlight much as a welder's filter, but produces, instead of a sickly green color, which the welders don't mind because they're not really using it to look at the sun, they're looking at, you know, bright flames and things like that, you get either a sort of a cool white image, or you get a yellowish or orangish image, which, you know, most people think of the sun as yellowish or orangish because the only time they can actually really look at it is around sunset, when it does in fact take on a yellowish or orangish hue. So these filters became quite commonplace. And nowadays, there is an international standard. I don't think I should rattle off the numbers because it's kind of annoying, but there is an international standard for safe solar viewers that you can put over your eyes and look directly at the sun with during whether there's an eclipse happening or not. And so they come in, the three most popular styles are cardboard framed eclipse glasses, where you have, you know, they look like glasses, but they're just made of cardboard and they're pretty inexpensive. You can typically get them, you know, individually for just a few bucks. And if you buy a bunch of them so you can give them out to your friends and family, you can get them for less than a buck a piece. And then there are little 3x5 cards with a little rectangular window of this filter material in it. So you can just hold that up and look through that. And then more recently, some of the companies that produce these have started making plastic sunglass style versions of them. They look like regular plastic sunglasses, but they're so dark that the only thing you can see through them is the sun. You wouldn't want to drive with these things on because you wouldn't see the road. So those are the three most common types, and they're readily available. And in fact, what we did in 2017, especially when we realized that there were some unscrupulous people selling counterfeit or not necessarily safe eclipse glasses, is that we started a list of vendors that we have on the AAS Eclipse Task Force website, which is just eclipse.aas.org. In our safety section, you can find a list of vendors that we have verified are selling products that meet this international standard. So if you find a vendor on that list, you know you can buy solar viewers with confidence. If you just go randomly to Amazon or to Walmart or, you know, or any of these giant marketplaces online and order eclipse glasses, if you don't know for sure which company you're buying from, you really don't know if you're getting a safe product. But if the company name is listed on our website too, then you know that it's okay.
We're going to take a short break, but stay with us. When we come back, we'll continue our preview of the Great American Total Solar Eclipse coming on April 8th, 2024, with our guest, Sky and Telescope Senior Contributing Editor Rick Feinberg. I'm Dave Shlohm, and you are listening to Blue Dot. And we're back. Let's return now to our preview of the total solar eclipse on April 8th, 2024, with the project manager for the American Astronomical Society's Solar Eclipse Task Force, Rick Feinberg. Let's do a little eclipses 101 very briefly. Mm-hmm. Let's start out with a lunar eclipse. Let's talk about what different kinds of eclipses you have. Let's explain to us what lunar eclipses are.
All right. Well, a lunar eclipse occurs when the moon passes through Earth's shadow. So it helps to think of what's really going on in space. The moon is going around the Earth, and the Earth, carrying the moon along with it, is going around the sun. So at certain times, the three bodies can line up. And if they line up at full moon and the moon manages to pass through Earth's shadow, because you have sun, Earth, and then moon, so the Earth casts its shadow on the moon, you get a lunar eclipse. On the opposite side of the moon's orbit, when the moon passes between the Earth and the sun, that's when you get a solar eclipse. So they're both happening because the three bodies are in a line, but a lunar eclipse is when the moon passes through Earth's shadow, and a solar eclipse is when the moon's shadow falls on the Earth.
And lunar eclipses are much more common to see in a person's lifetime, basically because the Earth's shadow is much bigger than the moon's shadow, right?
Well, that actually is the reason that lunar eclipses typically last a lot longer than solar eclipses. But the reason more people can see a lunar eclipse than typically will see a solar eclipse is because if the moon is up, and it's up for half the world at any given time, right, then you can see it. So the moon is visible in everybody's sky at the same time on the side of the Earth facing the moon, whereas solar eclipse, the moon's shadow is very small, and you have to be in that very small area in order to see a total eclipse. Whereas a total lunar eclipse, the moon goes through a shadow. Everybody who can see the moon from anywhere on the planet at that time can see the eclipse.
Yeah, so it's not something exceedingly rare to see in your lifetime, you know, in the place you live.
No, that's right.
You don't have
that's
to go right. Eclipse chasing for lunar eclipses, and they are beautiful.
They are.
And when we talk about total solar eclipses, there's a couple of different types. There's an annular eclipse and a total eclipse. Explain the difference between the two.
Well, a total eclipse is when the moon is close enough to Earth that it is larger in angular size than the sun, and therefore it completely blocks the sun's face. But the moon is on an elliptical orbit, and we've been hearing about supermoons, for example.
Yeah, last night.
Yeah, so a supermoon is when the moon is at the close point of its orbit around Earth at the same time as full moon. So the moon can vary in apparent size by something like 10 to 14%. It's different at different times. But right now, it's something like, let's say, an 11% difference between when it's closer to the Earth versus when it's farthest from the Earth. And so its apparent size changes by that same percentage. And sometimes, you see, there's this very interesting coincidence, which is that the sun and the moon look to be about the same size. You know, on average, they're about the same size. It's just a coincidence. It's because the sun is 400 times larger than the moon, but it's also 400 times farther away. And so the two look virtually identical in size. But because the moon's orbit especially is somewhat elliptical, the moon can be exactly the sun's size or a little bit bigger or a little bit smaller. So when the moon is farther from Earth than average, and it happens to pass between Earth and the sun, it doesn't completely block the sun. It leaves a little ring of bright sunlight. The Latin word for ring is annulus, and that's where the word annular solar eclipse comes from. So we're having an annular solar eclipse crossing a good chunk of the U.S. in October of 2023, October 14th. I'll be going to Albuquerque, New Mexico to see that one. An annular eclipse is basically a special kind of partial eclipse because the sun never gets completely covered, so it never really gets dark. But instead of just taking a bite out of the sun, you end up with this lunar bullseye where you have this black disk blocking all but the outer rim of the sun. And you have to look at that through filters. You can't look at it directly or you'll injure your eyes. But it's an interesting sight. You know, you don't see that every day, right? The sun turning into a ring. So it's kind of fun. It's often called the ring of fire, even though the sun's not on fire exactly. You know, it's fusing hydrogen into helium, but it's a nice prosaic way of saying it.
Okay, well, let's talk about eclipse phenomena. One of the things that I find really interesting and fascinating is the speed that the shadow of the moon, as it's going in on its path, that path of totality that we talked about, how fast is that shadow moving?
Well, this blows people away. It's moving thousands of miles an hour.
Wow.
And that's because the moon is moving in its orbit. It's got to go all the way around its orbit every month. So it's moving fast, and the shadow moves very fast with it. So the reason that a total solar eclipse doesn't last very long is because the shadow is, as I mentioned, in 2017, it was about 75 miles wide. In 2024, it'll be about 115 miles wide. That 115-mile wide shadow, which you can think of as a circle on the Earth or a disk, that's moving at thousands of miles per hour. So from the time the leading edge reaches you to the time the trailing edge disappears, it's only a few minutes, because that 100-odd miles is moving, you know, maybe 1,500 or 2,000 miles an hour, so it doesn't stick around very long.
So it's cooking along like a high-performance jet.
Yeah, exactly. Mach 2, yeah. Mach 3. Yeah, it's really zipping along.
Yeah. And what kind of duration are we looking at for the 2024 eclipse? How what's like the longest period of time, and where would that be?
It's just shy of 4.5 minutes. And
ooh,
it's,
that's a long time.
Yeah, it is. It's a relatively long eclipse. Eclipses, the total phase of a total solar eclipse can last anywhere from a second or two all the way up to 7.5 minutes. And most eclipses tend to be in the 2 to 3 minute range, if you're lucky. So 4.5 minutes is a pretty long one. We only had 2.5 minutes in 2017. It'll be longest in Mexico, actually, before it crosses into the US. So for people who want to see the absolute longest duration totality, they're going to go to Mexico. But it only is a few seconds shorter than the maximum when it gets into Texas. And so even in Southwest Texas, you're still going to have just shy of 4.5 minutes. As it moves to the northeast, the duration declines. By the time it gets up to where I live in New Hampshire, it won't actually pass over my house. It goes north of us. But in northern New Hampshire, it's about 3 minutes and 20 seconds, I think. A little bit shorter once it gets to Maine and up into northeastern Canada. But that's still everywhere along the path. It's a longer eclipse than it was in 2017. And the longer it lasts, the better, for the simple reason that there is so much to see and you've only got a few minutes. And so you really need to keep your head on, which is difficult because it's so exciting and so spectacular. And the more minutes you have, the more of an opportunity you have to see all these different phenomena.
Yeah. And we're going to talk about that phenomena here in just a moment. But before, one piece of advice that I would offer anybody this is going to be your first eclipse ever, is to not worry too much about taking pictures of it. There'll be so many people who are like you and astronomers that are so gifted at that, that you can really kind of ruin your eclipse experience by getting hung up on trying to take pictures instead of just taking it in. What's your take on that advice?
Yeah, I agree with that advice. I give that advice on the eclipse tours that I lead. If it's your first time, don't worry about taking pictures.
Just enjoy it.
Yeah, I mean, the first eclipse I saw, the first total eclipse I saw, was in Baja California, Mexico in 1991. And that eclipse lasted nearly 7 minutes. It was a really long one. And I just looked with my eyes. I didn't try to take pictures. I had a guy right next to me taking video and taking all kinds of pictures, but he'd already seen a dozen total eclipses. Plus, he had all these great telescopes and cameras and things, which I don't even own. So he was, or at least I didn't own at the time. I do now. But I don't take them with me to eclipses. You know, I pretty much just take a camera with a telephoto lens, and I try to split my time between taking some pictures at least, but mostly just looking, because the visual splendor is just, it's unsurpassed. And if you are fiddling with a camera, or, you know, you're not looking at the sun and you're not enjoying the experience, you're worrying about technology, get a couple under your belt. And then if you want to take some pictures, go ahead and take some pictures.
Yeah, exactly. Because an eclipse, it's really, it's an experience. It's a sensory experience. And so let's talk about some of the things that you get to experience in an eclipse, because it's not just that totality. There's kind of the lead up to it. There's a lot of interesting things happen. And then those things kind of happen in reverse order after. So let's talk about, like, one of the most interesting things that I noticed was right leading up to the eclipse is, you know, you can tell it's getting a little dimmer. But there, I felt a very distinct drop in temperature.
Yes, it was particularly noticeable in the 2017 eclipse out in the high Oregon desert. I actually had a thermometer and recorded, I think it was a 12-degree drop or something. It was really extreme, the biggest drop that I'd ever felt. And I think it was partly because we were at higher elevation, plus it was very dry. Yeah, very dry, exactly. So let's be clear, because a lot of people think of a 4.5 minute total solar eclipse as lasting 4.5 minutes, but and that's true of the total phase, but there's a 1.5 hour roughly, or 1.25 hour partial eclipse before the total eclipse, and then another 1.25 hour or so of partial eclipse after. And what's happening during that extended period is the moon is making its way onto or off of the sun's face. So, it takes a while for the moon to do that. And that's the initial partial phase and then the final partial phase. So what happens at first is, unless you're looking with a telescope or binoculars, you don't really notice that the moon has begun to block the sun, because it's just a very tiny little nibble at first. And it takes more than an hour to cover all of it. If you're looking with eclipse glasses, a few minutes after the moon begins to cover the sun, you'll notice a little fingernail-shaped dent on one side of the sun, and you'll realize,
a little bite out of the sun.
The astronomers were right. Their calculations are correct. There really is an eclipse happening. And then, again, if you're not looking either through a telescope or binoculars, again, with safe filters on them, or through eclipse filters, if you were just sort of hanging around waiting for totality, you might not notice much of anything happening until about three quarters of the sun is covered. Because, you know, yes, it's beginning to dim, but you have pupils that can dilate. And as the sun begins to get a little dimmer, as the moon is covering it, your pupils are just naturally slowly keeping up with it by dilating. And so you might not really notice until about three quarters of the sun is covered and your eyes have dilated about as much as they can. And then you'll begin to realize, hey, it's getting dark. Not dark, dark, but like cloudy day dark. But also, once about three quarters of the sun is covered, that's when you can start to feel a temperature drop. And I've been on numerous eclipse tours where the day dawned sunny and began to get hot, but we told everybody, bring a sweater, bring a jacket. And sure enough, about 15 or 20 minutes before totality, everybody is starting to put on their sweaters and jackets, because it gets enough colder that that you begin to feel a little chill. So it starts to get dark, it starts to get cold. And the last 10 minutes or so before totality, things start happening really fast.
Really fast, yeah. One of the things I really noticed, which I thought was wonderful, was you described it as being cloudy, but I would describe it as otherwise. It's not like cloudy. It's not like sunrise, sunset. It's an eerie lighting. When I saw it, I went, this is almost feels like I'm on an alien planet. It's a very strange lighting when you're getting right up to those moments right before totality.
Yes, and that's because the sun has gone from being a big disk in the sky to being a thin sliver. So there's a lot less light, and it's coming from a much smaller source. And it's kind of like if you had a zoom flashlight, you know, where you can make the beam wider or narrower. It's like the difference between that. But also, it begins to take on kind of a different coloration. The blue of the sky is changing. A lot of people describe it as a kind of a silvery light, but you're right. It's what I meant by cloudy was just the level of darkness that you experience. But you're right. In addition to the fact that it's getting darker, the light is changing character. And if you happen to look down at your shadow when the sun is a thin sliver, you will be amazed because your shadow is suddenly really sharp. And that's because the light source, the very thin sliver of the sun, is tiny. And a tiny light source casts a sharper shadow than a big diffuse disk in the sky. And so all of a sudden, you can see individual hairs on your head, or if you're bald like I am, individual hairs on your arms. If you look at the shadow of your hand, the fingers are crisp and really sharp, as opposed to their usual blurry shadows. So that's a pretty cool thing to see, too. And if you look under a tree, leafy tree, the little holes between the leaves are projecting little tiny crescent suns on the ground. And it's like, wow, this is another kind of pinhole projection where you're not looking at the sun. You're looking opposite the sun. You're looking down on the ground, but you're seeing little crescent suns.
And so, lots of them.
And lots of them. That's right. Especially if you have a leafy tree. Now, in October, during the annular eclipse, depending where you are, it's already fall and a lot of the trees may have lost their leaves. And in April, in the southwestern part of the country, trees will have their leaves again. But up here in New England, we won't have leaves yet. So it's better to have eclipse glasses or some other kind of pinhole projection device. Even just punching a little hole in a card and holding the card up with your back to the sun and looking at the shadow of the card on the ground, you'll see a solar crescent.
Another interesting thing that happens is as it gets darker, it really confuses the wildlife, birds and insects.
Yes. That's one thing. I usually like to go on an eclipse cruise because when you're on an eclipse cruise, you're on a mobile ship. And if there's clouds around, you can easily move to a spot that's less cloudy. But the thing about being on a ship is there's not much wildlife around, maybe some seabirds. But you're right. If you're anywhere where there are like farm animals or just lots of birds around, they all think that it's sunset. And so whatever they're going to do at sunset, whether it's head back to the barn or go back to their den or whatever it is, they're going to do that in the minutes right before totality. So it's really quite interesting. A lot of people were observing the 2017 eclipse from farms and ranches, and they saw the horses and the cows and the sheep and all the rest of the farm animals behaving very strangely as if it was, you know, sunset. And this was in the morning. So it's kind of like, you know, two sunrises and two sunsets on eclipse day.
Yeah, I remember the birds turned off and the insects turned on. And frogs too. It was really, yes. It was very interesting.
Yeah, it really is.
One of my favorite things that I saw that people should really try to take advantage of viewing them if you can, and they're so strange and interesting, are the shadow bands. Tell us about what those are and how you can see them.
Yeah, shadow bands are, they're sort of undulating, alternating strips of dark and light, kind of subtle. Most of the time, they happen when the sun is a very, very thin crescent right before or right after totality. And basically, it's the thin solar crescent twinkling in the atmosphere. And so you get this, you've seen stars twinkling. If they were brighter, you would see alternating dark and light spots as the twinkling starlight flickered on the ground. But they're not bright enough to do that. But the sun is bright enough to do that. So we see these flickering, alternating dark and light, well, we call them shadow bands. You don't always see them. And it helps, for example, to have a large white surface to look for them on. So sometimes you'll see people come to a total solar eclipse and spread out a bed sheet around their observing area so that they can look for shadow bands. If you're observing from the desert and you have nice light colored sand and it's nice and flat, you can see them there. Sometimes if you're observing near a house or the superstructure of a ship, as in my case sometimes, you'll see the shadow bands on the wall or on the superstructure of the ship. But they're fleeting, and the easiest way to know if they're there is you'll hear some experienced person shout, "Shadow bands!" And then you know to look on the ground or something, you know, look on the ground, look on the nearby wall. Otherwise, they're so subtle you might not notice them even if they're happening around you. But yeah, they're another one of these things that you can only see if you're, you know, if you get, well, you can see shadow bands outside the path of totality, but only if you're at a place where the sun has become a, you know, like a microscopic crescent.
And the shadow bands, to me, they look like weird shadowy snakes slithering across the screen. It was very cool. I hope people get to see that.
I should say there's another term for them is sun snakes.
I can see that. That's what they kind of look like to me. We're going to take a short break, but stay with us as we preview the total solar eclipse coming on April 8th, 2024, to much of the United States with our guest and guide, Sky and Telescope Senior Contributing Editor, Rick Feinberg. I'm Dave Shlom, and you are listening to Blue Dot. And we're back, and thanks for listening. Let's return now to our conversation with Rick Feinberg, Senior Contributing Editor for Sky and Telescope magazine and Project Manager for the American Astronomical Society's Solar Eclipse Task Force, as we look forward to the total solar eclipse on April 8th, 2024. Now we're getting almost to totality, and there's a couple of very cool things that happen that always give the crowd, you know, the ooh and ah moments. Bailey's beads and the diamond ring effect. Tell us about those.
All right. So Bailey's beads are a really neat phenomenon. You can see these while you're looking through your eclipse glasses in the, you know, in the final seconds before totality. What's happening is that the moon is now almost completely covering the sun. And on the edge that's just about to disappear, you know, the moon is not a smooth sphere like a billiard ball. It's a mountainous and cratered, you know, surface. And so all of a sudden, the mountains on the edge of the moon begin to cut the crescent into pieces. And pretty soon, only a few little spots of bright sunlight are shining through the valleys between the moon's mountains. And so this was first described by an English astronomer, Francis Bailey. And so that's why we call them Bailey's beads. But he was the first to describe this amazing sort of string of pearls phenomenon just before totality and then again just after totality. And you can see these at an annular eclipse too, because again, the moon is going to it's not going to completely cover the sun, but it's going to be butted right up against the inner edge of the sun. And so mountains will cut off some of that thin crescent before the whole rest of it is cut off. And it's quite an interesting phenomenon. But if you're looking through eclipse glasses or a handheld viewer, you're not as likely to really recognize Bailey's beads that well because they're more easily seen if there's some magnification. So if you have a safe solar filter for binoculars, that's a much more reliable way of getting a good view of Bailey's beads. Now, when there's only one bead left, one little bright spot of sunlight, at that point, it's safe to take off your filter because that bead is just about to disappear. But during that brief moment, when you look at that bright bead of sunlight as it's about to get swallowed up, you see the bright bead with a ring around the moon's dark silhouette. And that ring is the inner part of the solar corona. And this is what we call the diamond ring, because you have the inner corona, bright white all around the moon, and then this brilliant bead of sunlight on one side of it. And it really does look like a diamond ring in the sky. But it's very important not to look at that for very long. So if you're going to look at it at the beginning of totality, you wait till there's only one bead left, and then you take off your filters and you see this brilliant, beautiful diamond in the sky. Then the bead disappears and you're looking at the total eclipse and you see the corona shining forth, and it's perfectly safe. To see it at the end of totality, you don't have your filters on, right? You're watching the total eclipse. If you're looking through eclipse glasses or a handheld viewer, or if you've got one at the ready, you wait until that first bead reappears now on the other side of the sun, and you look for just a fraction of a second, you enjoy the beautiful diamond ring, and then you put your filters right back on and watch for Bailey's beads again. One thing that's really important to know is that You should not be looking at the total eclipse through unfiltered binoculars or a telescope unless you have some way of knowing when totality is going to end, because you do not want to be looking through optics, which are collecting a lot more sunlight than your unaided eye, when the diamond ring reappears and then Bailey's beads do, because that's just way much more sunlight than your eye can handle.
Yeah, I would highly recommend the app Solar Eclipse Timer. That thing is wonderful because it tells you, you know, notice temperature drops, you know, and it tells you when to take your glasses off. It says glasses off. So now you can enjoy the eclipse. And
Isn't that technology wonderful?
It's incredible. Gordon Telepin, the guy that put this together, is just an awesome person and a great educator.
I use that too. Yep.
I thought it was a wonderful thing to have. He's your guide, especially if you've never experienced an eclipse before. It's like having, you know, it's like having Rick right there with you with the timer telling you what to do.
That's right.
You know, I thought that was wonderful. And but one thing that I heard a few horror stories was people leaving their solar eclipse glasses on during totality. That's just like the worst.
Yeah, that's really terrible because you will see total darkness. You won't see the total eclipse of the sun. And again, this is caused by misinformation, you know, people thinking that or somehow hearing that you can't look at the sun even during the total eclipse because, you know, maybe the sun has dangerous rays or something like that. But if you think about it, wait a minute, the sun's out every day. Whatever rays the sun is producing, they're out there all the time. Why are they going to be any worse during a total solar eclipse when most of the sun is blocked by the moon? I've heard some people say, well, the moon focuses the sun's light and therefore, you know, can cause you to have retinal burns or something. But the moon doesn't have an atmosphere or enough gravity to do any such focusing. So it is absolutely perfectly safe to look at the sun without any protection at all during the total phase of a total solar eclipse. And in fact, if you don't look without solar eye protection, you won't see everything that there is to see.
To me, the most beautiful part of the solar eclipse, what I found just very compelling, is the corona. It's the most beautiful, I don't even know how to describe the quality, the pearly silver light. It's just so gorgeous. And using a nice pair of 10 by 50 binoculars is what I used. It was just awesome because you have the corona. And then also, we get the stars come out during the daytime, which is a wonderful experience because you'll be seeing the constellations. This will be in April. So you'll be seeing the constellations of fall in the daytime sky, which is really an awesome experience. Are there going to be any bright planets up with the sun this time?
Yes. Jupiter and Venus, which are the two brightest planets, will be visible during the eclipse, except by the time the eclipse gets up to the northeast, I don't remember which of the two planets it is, but one of them has set already. I think it's Venus, I'm not sure. But in any case, I've never actually seen constellations during an eclipse. I've seen a few bright stars, but the most obvious thing you see are the bright planets. And for this eclipse in April, it will be Jupiter on one side and Venus on the other. And they're so bright that you can actually see them before totality even arrives, maybe 5 or 10 minutes before totality. These planets will become visible in the sky because, you know, you can see them at twilight, for example, and that's about what the level of brightness will be.
You see some of the brightest stars and the planets.
Yeah, I always tell people the planets are so obvious, you won't have any problem finding those. But don't waste a lot of time looking for stars because, you know, you can see stars on any clear night. You don't get to see the solar corona, which is the main attraction of a total eclipse, except during a total eclipse. And so, you know, you really want to spend a lot of time looking at that. And as you say, binoculars are ideal because the corona, it's not just a shapeless, you know, glow around the sun.
It's moving.
I don't know if you actually see it moving in the short few minutes of totality, but you do see differences from one end of the eclipse path to the other. But what you see is that the solar corona is sculpted by the sun's very powerful magnetic field. And so you get streamers and loops and arcs and all kinds of things. And what you're doing is you're basically, it's as if you had sprinkled iron filings around a magnet. you can see the shape of the sun's magnetic field. And during the time when the sun is most active and has the most spots, which is, we're currently approaching that time, it's called solar maximum, the solar corona becomes very large and very, it'll have streamers going in all different directions. There was a total eclipse visible very briefly in Australia and Indonesia earlier this year in April. And the corona was already very, very much a solar maximum type corona. It had very long streamers going in every which way, lots of interesting loops and other patterns in the field. These were recorded by high resolution cameras, but you can see them with your eyes, especially if you are looking through binoculars.
Yeah, and another interesting thing to do to you don't want to miss this is to not just look up, but look around you 360 degrees at the horizon, because that is an eerie sight.
Yes, if you think about it, you're standing inside the moon's shadow, which is about 115 miles across. Which means that in any direction, some 50 or so miles away, it's still daylight. You're looking beyond the edge of the shadow. And so you have basically daylight around you all the way around the horizon, but because the sunlight's coming at you from, horizontal as opposed to from up high, it takes on the same kinds of shades that you get during sunset or sunrise. You get the beautiful pastel pinks and oranges and yellows. And so you have these beautiful sunrise or sunset colors all the way around the horizon. And it's very strange because, normally you see them to the east or you see them to the west, but now you're seeing them all around you. And it's dark overhead and you're standing in the dark, but all around you, there's this beautiful bluish sky with the pastel sunset and sunrise colors. It's really quite spectacular. And basically everything we've been talking about for the last 10 minutes, you only see if you're inside the path of totality.
All of those wonderful things. It's such a total eclipse is not something you just see, you experience. It's a sensory overload. And it's interesting to me to watch people and listen to them. A lot of people start to cry. It's like their senses are on overload. It's not that they're unhappy or sad or anything. It's just that they go through this sensory overload thing and they start crying.
Yes, they're in awe. They are seeing something, we use the word awesome way too often. But a total solar eclipse truly is awesome. And you feel that awe and that wonder. And, like you say, it's an experience. I always talk about experiencing an eclipse, not seeing one. It's a visual thing. It's auditory because of the sounds of the animals, the sounds of the birds, the sounds of people around you screaming or crying or laughing or shouting. And you feel it with your skin because of the temperature drop. You, of course, see it. And if you're chewing eclipse gum or eclipse mints, you can even taste it. But it really is a multisensory experience, and it is emotional.
You said something in your column in Sky and Telescope magazine, which was called Say What You Mean, that I thought was wonderful, because you'll hear people say, this is a once-in-a-lifetime experience. Well, it doesn't have to be. You know, there are people like, how many eclipses have you experienced, Rick?
I've experienced 14 total eclipses, and the one in April will be my 15th.
Well, there you go. But everyone should experience at least one in their lifetime. Everyone should get that experience. And I hope for people for 2024, this will provide that opportunity.
I think it will for a lot more people for two reasons. One, a lot more people live within the path, and so they're going to have a total solar eclipse, even if they just stay home. And the other one is that a lot of those people who traveled closer to the path in 2017, but not into it, realized their mistake after they saw the images and heard the stories of, from people who went into the path. And so I think a lot more people are going to travel into the path this time than did in 2017. So it could end up being, a much bigger event than the one 7 years ago. And the time to see it is April 8th, 2024. There's not going to be another one in this country till 2024.
2044.
2044, right? Sorry. That one will only touch a small part of the country, But in 2045, there's going to be another one like 2017 that crosses the entire country. But, you know, that's 21 years from now, and some of us may not make it. I hope I do, but, you know, depending how old you are, you may not get another chance unless you're able to travel all over the world to see them in other places.
Well, Rick Feinberg, Senior Contributing Editor for Sky and Telescope Magazine, thanks for sharing all this great information about the big eclipse coming up in April 2024. I really appreciate you spending the time with us.
It's been a lot of fun, Dave, and I'm looking forward to the April eclipse, and I know you are too.
Thanks again to our guest, Senior Contributing Editor for Sky and Telescope Magazine and Project Manager for the American Astronomical Society's Solar Eclipse Task Force, Rick Feinberg. You can learn more about the eclipse and see maps showing the path of totality at their website, eclipse.aas.org. If you've never experienced a total solar eclipse, I sure hope you do. And just remember, 99% of totality won't get it done. Get inside that 115-mile-wide path of totality, and if the sky is clear, I guarantee you will truly experience awe. Blue Dot is a production of North State Public Radio, a service of Cap Radio in beautiful and talented Northern California. We're distributed by PRX. If you want to revisit, share, or check out past episodes, you can do just that on our website, mynspr.org. And while you're at it, subscribe to our podcast so you never miss an episode on our website, the NPR One app, or wherever you get your podcast groove on. The theme music is by Matt Schiltz. Blue Dot is engineered and produced by the maestro, Matt Fidler. For all of us here, I remind you there that from deep space, we all live on a pale blue dot.